Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Hemant Mehta.
And I'm Jessica Blumke.
And you're listening to the podcast for FriendlyAtheist.com. You can now listen to all of our episodes and see show notes at FriendlyAtheistPodcast.com.
By the way, we now have a merchandise shop on the website, so if you want your podcast swag, some shirts, mugs, baby onesies, Hemant, you're going to get a baby onesie for your kiddo?
Of course.
Yeah. Go to our website and click on the store tab.
We're brought to you today by Foundation Marketing. If you own a small business, then you know how frustrating advertising can be. Foundation Marketing offers all-encompassing solutions backed by 20 years' experience. This includes professional web design, graphic design, printing, and online marketing solutions. They are a certified Google partner and offer free consultation. Visit them online at fmkg.net. Let them know you were sent by the Friendly Atheist podcast, and you'll get 10% off any sale. They're also donating 20% of all sales driven by this podcast to the Clergy Project and Foundation Beyond Belief, 10% each. Once again, check them out at fmkg.net.
Christine Treehan is an eco-conscious, secular, vegan mother based out of Hawaii. About a year ago, she launched a Kickstarter campaign for a book called Christian Mythology for Children. It's essentially a book that explains the stories of the Bible as just that, stories. They don't disparage religion, and they don't pretend any of it is real, either. They read just like Greek mythology, with beautiful illustrations by Christopher Zyshevsky, to boot. It's a wonderful way to introduce your children to these characters without indoctrinating them in the faith. Christine, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
So what possessed you to write a book like this? It seems like you're writing about these Bible stories, and whenever people want to tell these biblical stories, it's very much a, you have to believe these stories. Like, they're never written in an objective sort of way. Mm-hmm. So where's this idea coming from? What possessed you to do it?
Right. Well, there was a day when my kids had made a complete mess of all the books in their room, and they were scattered all over the floor. And I was cleaning up the room, and I picked up a children's Bible that my mother had given them, and it hadn't been read because I hadn't wanted to read it, and they just hadn't picked it out to read. But it was there because I always thought, you know, I'm never going to make religion taboo. I'm not going to hide it from them. I want them to know about it. So when my mom gave me this Bible, I thought, well, okay, I have to live by this rule that I made for myself not to make this a taboo subject to my kids. So I kept it. But then I started looking through it and actually reading what was in there, and I was totally appalled at the type of language that was being used. It was all indoctrination and fear and talking about, you know, Jesus loves you and that's why he died on the cross for you and all this stuff. And I was like, this is actually isn't educating my kids in any way. This is not information that's useful for them, and it has all this indoctrination. And so I thought, well, there has to be a book out there where it's just a story like you read about Greek mythology or something like that. So I went looking, and I couldn't find anything like it, absolutely nothing like it. So then I thought, well, maybe I could write, you know, just write these stories out for my kids and read it just to them. But then the more I talked to people in our secular family group, you know, the more I heard, you know, other people want this too. So that's when we decided to do the Kickstarter and see how much interest there was in a book like this.
And that Kickstarter did really well too. I mean, it not only surpassed its goal of like whatever five figures that it was kickstarting for, but how did you, I mean, I think I'm just curious about this from a logistical point of view. This looks, I mean, I have the physical copy of this book. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, the layout's beautiful. The illustrations are great. How did you go from, okay, I have these stories, I have it written out, to, all right, I have to get an illustrator, I have to make it into this format. Like, how did you go from A to B there?
Right. Right. Well, before I did the Kickstarter, I wrote the book because I wanted to make sure that I knew what it would look like in its, you know, final form for the most part. I wasn't able to find an illustrator and hire them on my own bill, basically. So that's kind of where the Kickstarter came in. But I did use some of those online portals where you can put a project up there for illustrators and they can send you a sample that would fit your project. So I was able to vet a few illustrators, and I found one that I thought was fitting, and that's the illustration that we used for the cover on the Kickstarter. And, you know, he had a lot of examples on his page, too. So at that point, I hadn't really spent a lot of my own funds to, you know, get to the point where we could throw a Kickstarter out there and see, you know, is this going to be something that people are going to want to buy? And I thought, you know, if the Kickstarter doesn't work and there's not enough interest, then that will tell me and I won't make the book, you know.
So what was I'm just wondering what the motivation was. Do you think these stories are just good stories? Do you think that they're part of, there's something that somebody, that kids should be aware of just as out in the world? Or do you think that there is morality to these?
I think there's a mix of all of that. I think there is a lot of parts of the Bible that are in our culture and people make references to them. You know, if you go to a comedy show, you're probably going to hear a religious reference, especially a Christian one today. And I find that there's, you know, there's even those movies out there like Year One with Jack Black in it. The whole thing is just the whole play on how funny it is, like, to talk about the Bible stories and what it would really be like. So I think a lot of kids, you know, they miss what, you know, the punchline is and stuff. And there's a few stories where I think there's a moral to it. And in the book, we do mention that at the end in our little italicized.
Here's the takeaway lesson for this particular story.
Right, if there's something in there that is laudable, we'll, you know, say that.
I love that. If there's something in there, yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of stories where I have mentioned in the comment at the end why it's not morally uplifting.
So that's an interesting story, because what about like Abraham and Isaac, where the dad is basically saying, "All right, I'll kill my son because God told me to." There, what do you say about that story?
Did that one make your book?
Yeah, that's in there for sure. And that one, I was thinking about not putting it in actually, because it is a story about a dad potentially killing his child and.
Good night, kids. Here's a bedtime story.
Mommy loves you, but not so much that she wouldn't kill you for God.
And yeah, what did you say about it at the end?
Don't do this.
Yeah, basically, I kind of mentioned that people who hear God say they hear God talking to them, we now know that that is a mental disorder and they require the help of a professional psychologist. And you shouldn't listen to voices in your head that tell you to harm people.
That's a great takeaway.
Out there as it is, and not, you know, trying to demoralize the story too much, but also just, you know, saying what we really should know about, you know, people who follow voices in their head.
Kristen, you put the best possible spin on that. I'm very impressed by you right now.
On the flip side of that, what's an example of a Bible story you included in the book that has a positive spin on it?
Pillar of salt.
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember.
It takes a while. I know.
The one where the guy has his daughters have sex,
really,
so the angels don't. What's that one?
I'm surprised about the story of Jonah and the whale, because it was one of the few times in the Bible when God is trying to be funny, and the character Jonah, he's sent to tell everybody, you know, you've been so bad and God is going to wipe you out. And when he goes to tell them that, they repent and they turn around and they change their ways, and God decides, oh, okay, fine, I'm not going to do that. And he gets completely outraged and he starts yelling at God, and he's just like, completely pissed off about, oh, well, you didn't follow through. I wanted to watch this happen. It was going to be so exciting for me. And, you know, God just basically blows him off. And it's one of the few times where it's like, you know, there's a story about forgiveness and how that's a better option than, you know, following through with whatever angry plan that you had.
Did you end up reading these stories to your own kids?
I have read a few of them. My kids are 3 and 5, so they're, you know, one of them is below the age suggestion for this book. But they do enjoy the illustrations a lot, and they enjoy the shorter stories, like the Verse of Jesus and some of the other, you know, shorter ones. But it is kind of a book that's for age 5 is probably the youngest, so 5 to 15-ish.
So,
you know?
So for your oldest, what was the reaction when you read the story? Did it come across the way you wanted it to come across?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of Greek mythology and Roman mythology and other mythology books in our collection of books, and I felt like he understood it in the same way, so... mission accomplished, I guess.
Yeah, I love that, because when I was in second grade, how old are you in second grade?
Seven-ish? Yeah.
I took, like, this little Greek mythology course and was fascinated by it. And granted, those aren't, like, super morality tales in any way, but I loved the stories, and I still have fascination to this day. And I kind of wish there was something like this for Christianity, because I feel like I was way behind the curve, because I never went to church, so I didn't get any of the jokes. But I love that you're doing this. My question is, when you started getting interest in this and you saw a need for it, do you find that people who are religious are interested in this because it kind of repackages stories they do believe in a sort of more bite-sized way for younger kids? Or is it more people, like more secular people, who want to expose their children to this without the indoctrination?
I haven't heard any feedback about that. I have heard some parents of like other religions, not Christians, say that it is a useful resource for them to understand a different religion. So, you know, perhaps it isn't as strong as some people might suggest. The stories themselves are pretty much, you know, free of any opinion. They're just written as a story, and then the opinion part comes in after, and sometimes before each of the chapters.
Have you thought about doing a series? Like, do one on Islam, do one on Judaism, do one on Hinduism?
Good luck with the illustrations on the Quran one, by the way.
Yeah.
Kind of tread that line carefully.
Considering doing Mormon mythology or Scientology mythology next. I know it's a mouthful.
Why Mormonism? Just out of curiosity.
We're still in the research phase and just kind of seeing how this book does and what the response is before we launch something else.
Do you have a background in Mormonism, or is it just something that you find interesting?
I don't. I do find it very interesting, and I actually know many ex-Mormons that I have talked to, and they say that it's probably going to be more exciting to read and more exciting to illustrate and see the illustrations, because there's so much more bizarre stuff.
You could do an entire chapter for every one of Joseph Smith's wives.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
You're welcome.
Terrible joke.
I'll be here all night. Were you? You said that the one of the inspirations for your book is that you saw your kids with that Bible mother gave them. If I have that right, did she raise you to believe these stories is literally true? Like, what was your religious upbringing like?
Yeah, I would describe it as fundamentalist Catholic, and it was a very sheltered experience as a child. I only knew other families and other kids who believed very similarly to me. So my parents are very in deep. They believe it 100%. And, you know, I don't blame them, because they believe for emotional reasons, and it's hard to argue with that. So agree to disagree after all these years.
Are they aware of your book? Like, what was their reaction to it?
Yeah, you know, I didn't shove it in their face or anything. They found out inadvertently, and then I just haven't mentioned it, because I know that they're not going to be thrilled about it, and I don't want it to come between the relationship that we've developed.
Totally understand.
Aside from religion, so. Yeah. Has there been any kind of backlash on the book? Does anybody see it as blasphemous or anything like that?
I haven't had any yet. There's been a few comments about the format and just not liking the way it's written and things like that on Amazon.
Screw that.
Everybody's a critic.
Everyone will criticize anything. That's, again, I'm not saying this because you're on the phone with us, but, like, this is one of the things I hate when people are nitpicking all that sort of stuff, because, like, Christine on with us, she did something.
Yeah.
But there are so many people who are like, I can type out a tweet that slams it. That's my contribution to the world.
I think we touched a nerve with him in here.
Not that I've ever gotten anything like that. I know.
Yeah, it is a lot more work than I ever thought it would be going into it, but it's so worth it because I think this is a resource that has been long overdue. And I'm really glad to be able to put it out there. And I'm glad that people are supporting this project and have supported it. I'm very grateful to all the Kickstarter supporters and all the pre-orders and everybody who paid more than the book is.
that's a nice feeling.
Like, they made it happen. And, yeah. You know, I wrote it and I orchestrated the illustrations and everything. But, like, without them, this would never have happened. So
did you do anything on Kickstarter?
It is a community-supported book.
Right.
Did you do anything on Kickstarter before, or was this a new experience for you as well?
Completely new, yeah.
That's awesome.
So what, you live in Hawaii, right, you said? On Hawaii, in Hawaii?
Say it again?
It doesn't matter, I screwed it up the first time. You live in Hawaii, is that correct?
I do, yeah, we just moved here recently, yeah.
Really? So what's the community like in terms of religiosity?
It's different. I came from Phoenix, where it was a red state and very heavily religious. And it's a breath of fresh air coming here. People they call themselves spiritual more often, which I can handle that. Yeah. There's a lot of, I guess, what you'd call woo-woo spirituality, you know, just being in tune with the universe and using crystals and
dolphins healing you.
Kind of more of the Hindu, you know, there's a Hindu vibe to it, which, I mean, all of that, it's so harmless and they're not pushing it on anybody. And the intention behind it is usually very well-meaning and they're just trying to bring peace and love into the world. It's a hippie thing. So
I mean, there's probably a reason Hawaii's the place where the only Hindu member of Congress comes from.
Yeah.
Brown pride.
Yeah.
I know.
There is Christianity here. And I think the thing that annoys me the most about the state is it seems in the schools, they have a lot more Christian schools and like their traditional Hawaiian schools are very Christian oriented. So I mean, that's just, but it's easy to avoid. It's definitely a little freer here.
I may have the details wrong on this, but I remember covering this on the website several months ago or maybe a year ago or something where, yeah, some Christian megachurches, usually they can rent out space at public schools. They could do that anywhere. It's legal. They just pay the rental price.
Sure.
But some,
really?
Some, yeah, it's totally legal. But some Christian churches in Hawaii specifically were doing that, but they weren't paying like the full rental price or something. And these schools were being shortchanged that revenue. And in some cases, these schools were like falling apart in some places where like, no, they needed that revenue and the church wasn't giving it to them. But a lawsuit was filed and a settlement was reached or something. But yeah, it is one of those things that even in a state that's, like Christine's saying, kind of decent as far as religion goes, you still see shades of that religious privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Christine, I want to go back
recently. There was a bill that was proposed. I think it was going to be a church in on Oahu, and they were trying to get public funds to pay for the entire build of this church, and obviously they got struck down. But just
that
would be a great idea to bring forward was, you know, quite audacious. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to go back to, you kind of mentioned it in passing that a lot of the traditional Hawaiian schools are Christian. I don't know.
Do you mean they have a Christian vibe to them, or like there's just a lot of them? So
Christian.
It's yeah,
A little bit of both. There's some private schools that are, you know, Christian based, but the Kamehameha Mass schools, they tend to have an undercurrent of Christianity to them.
Do you?
And those are publicly funded schools.
Do you know how that? I mean, I admit my Hawaiian history is not great, but when did that kind of combination happen? Because I don't think Jesus is necessarily from Hawaii. I don't think. But was it missionaries that went out there and sort of
Christianized the place?
Yeah, I was going to say infested. You could say Christianized.
Yeah, actually, I don't know the answer to that. That would be very interesting to know how that came about when they came over here to convert.
If I may ask, how are you raising your own kids? Are you raising them to, you said you want to introduce them to all these religions, but are you raising them to be atheists? Or are you just saying, look, let me show you a little bit of everything because this is what Christians believe, this is what other people believe, and then you figure it out for yourself?
Yeah, and I think at this young age, I'm really not proactively putting religion in front of them. We've come across it from relatives here and there. But that's definitely my philosophy, is to give them a toolkit to use to think logically. And once they're at that level and that ability, then we can start talking about other religions and comparative religions and bringing that into their world and their vocabulary. But I feel like that's probably not going to happen until, you know, 7 or 8, when they're able to reason and sort things out with the tools that we provide them with.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to your book for a second. When you were writing these stories for kind of a child audience, were there any stories that you're like, you know what, I don't really know this story very well, I need to do some research on it? Or did you only cover the stories that everyone knows? Like, here's a story of Adam and Eve, here's Abraham and Isaac, etc.
Yeah, well, I did a little bit of research and made a list of the most common stories. And then I also compared that with some children's Bibles and what stories they included. Mm. And obviously there's a lot in the Bible that is not anything you would want to tell a young child about.
Sure.
So that obviously didn't make the list. But yeah, there was a few stories that I wasn't like familiar with by heart that I did have to do a bit of research on. Actually the story of Joseph Coach. It's quite lengthy, and I reading it for a refreshed moment, the first time coming back to it, I realized I didn't know the whole story, and it had been so convoluted in my memory because of the, you know, Joseph and the Technicolor dream coat and all these, you know, modern versions of it that have come out. So yeah.
So what stories do you have any stories off the top of your head that kind of went to the cutting room floor that you thought about including but realized either they're inappropriate or long or boring or all three?
I didn't start writing until I had a compiled list of what I thought was definitely worth writing about. But, you know, I can't remember if it's Abraham, but there's a story in the Abrahamic parts of the Bible where his daughters come in and make love to him and try to get pregnant. And I mean,
and you didn't put
like
that in
all,
huh?
Over the Bible. It obviously isn't worth putting in a kid's book. So
Save that one for the sequel.
Yeah.
I'm curious, when you said about writing them, did you actually just like open a Bible, read it, and sort of restate it in your own words, or did you go through other children's Bibles to see what kind of details they pulled out or left behind?
Yeah, I did a little bit of both. I wanted to stay mostly true to like an original text, but I also, in my book, I put a lot of intro tags in, like kind of like a once upon a time in this story kind of tag, because I wanted it to sound like a story and not like something that's reading true. So there's a little bit of changes like that in there, but for the most part it follows like the NIV. I'm forgetting what that
the New International Version.
Yes, that's mostly what I use for reading Bible and kind of translating into more readable English.
Sure.
For kids, and adding kind of that once upon a time to the story.
I would like to make a request that you make kind of an adult version of the same book with the same sort of themes of like, Yeah, let's talk about that story about the dad whose daughters had sex with him or whatever. Because I'm sure there is some morality or amorality that we should talk about, because I have a bunch of politicians that I would love to send that book to.
Right. With the illustrations, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make sure it gets through.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And the book, again, is called Christian Mythology for Children. And even if you missed the Kickstarter, the book is still available on Amazon. We'll have links to all that in the show notes. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the podcast for FriendlyAtheist.com.
We were brought to you today by Foundation Marketing. If you own a small business, then you know how frustrating advertising can be. Foundation Marketing offers all-encompassing solutions backed by 20 years' experience. This includes professional web design, graphic design, printing, and online marketing solutions. They are a certified Google partner and offer free consultation. Visit them online at fmkg.net. Let them know you were sent by the Friendly Atheist podcast, and you'll get 10% off any sale. They're also donating 20% of all sales driven by this podcast to the Clergy Project and Foundation Beyond Belief, 10% each. Once again, check them out at fmkg.net.
This episode was taped at Cinnamon Sound Studios in Aurora, Illinois. The music was composed by Brad Chagdis. If you like what you're hearing, please consider making a contribution at patreon.com/Hemant. That's He-Man-T. We appreciate your support. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com.
I'm Hemant Mehta.
And I'm Jessica Blumke. We hope you join us next time.